All right, welcome back, everybody. Orelebo Heights, episode 12, 1 year anniversary. Here we are. I actually tried doing the math the other day because I looked it up when I did the first podcast, and it was in October. And because I do this once a month, I figured because it's number 12, it would be a 1 year, but it's September. So I don't know how that worked out where I started in October, but I've done 12. But it's 1 month before October because we're in September right now. So, anyways, that's beside the point. Special episode today because today's Friday, of course, is when I record at Espacio. But this is one of two shows this Friday that I'm recording because I have some extra time, not only at Espacio, because I was able to get a special guest to come on, but because they couldn't be at the studio. You know, we worked it out, and here I am recording at the mobile setup, an undisclosed location. I'm just kidding. It's my girlfriend's house. It's in Boyle Heights. So super excited to bring in somebody who I've admired and followed online for a number of years. I think for a lot of folks too, they followed you. You know, they see what you're doing out there on the social media sphere and the blogosphere in the early years. And I think a lot of folks are interested to know who you are. So please introduce yourself.
What up? It's the Bill to Angelito. It's a pleasure to meet you, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here in the East Side on Friday on a wonderful day in late summer 2018, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming. I know you're not too public about, you know, doing interviews and stuff like that. Actually, when I was going through your website, I saw that link on the side where you did that email interview with KCET a few years ago about local bloggers, highlighting local bloggers in the neighborhood. So that was kind of my starting point into, like, all right, let's, you know, doing some research, formulating some questions, and it was a funny interview.
Oh, yeah. It's the militants are always down to do interviews. It just has to be done under certain conditions.
Yeah, of course. Like today, no questions about personal identity.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not here to play gotcha journalism. I'm pretty, like, forward and straight with folks about what I want to ask, what we want to talk about. And, you know, if for some reason I miss that, you know, we can always skip over that and just keep moving on. But again, I'm super excited that you're here.
Well, just in case the militant has an unspecified number of operatives standing by just in case of unforeseen circumstance.
But yeah. No, I mean, the block is hot. I don't know if you can see across the street. The street sign has bullet holes.
Word.
And then that's where I was telling you, that across the street, those are where the hipsters live.
You can tell by the horizontal fence.
Yeah, so all three, there's four units. We saw the listing, and it's $2,400 for two bedrooms. Yeah. And it comes with, like, you know, free gang shootings, graffiti on the walls, all the good stuff that you get in Boyle Heights.
Well, since we're out here in the street, we agreed to play a game called Spot the Hipster.
Yeah.
So, as how it goes is, the first one of us to spot a hipster points it out, then they get a point. And at the end of the interview, we compare points and see who wins.
Yeah, I have my notepad right here with my questions, too. So I'll keep track. I actually already saw them walking their dogs, so I don't think you might see much of them.
Okay.
But you never know. These folks are in and out all day. But again, thank you so much for coming, making the time. I know it's not always easy, you know, making it out here to the East Side on public transportation or in whatever undisclosed method of transportation you decided to get here. But that is one big thing that, you know, I admire about you, that I forgot where I was reading it. I was in one of the older blog posts or one of the interviews. You have this rule of thumb. I think it might have been an alias. When you first started blogging and they were highlighting you, your rule of thumb for how you take public transportation, how you walk, or when you decide to drive. So it's something along the lines of, if you're going to walk somewhere, it's under 2 miles. If you're going to ride your bike, it's 5 miles. And then if you're going to drive, it's more than 10 miles. I don't know if you're still following that.
More or less. Yeah, he still does.
All right, cool. I mean, for me, I gotten lazy. As soon as I got a car, like 2 years ago, I've just pretty much been driving everywhere, mostly to work, which was the biggest thing to do it for. But now it's like, all right, let's just go here, 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 and there, and deal with the parking wars that is the city.
Well, it's a smart way to drive. You could combine your trips. So if you want to, for instance, if you have to go to Sherman Oaks, Glendale, and let's say Leimert Park, mm-hmm. and you're coming from, let's say, downtown. Well, you want to go to certain places that are adjacent to each other or near enough to each other. And also you want to leave and travel not at rush hour.
That's right, not at peak hour.
And definitely avoid the 405.
Yeah, I make the mistake every once in a while to travel during rush hour to Pasadena to go to the grocery store or go to the movies, one of those. So somehow I end up in Pasadena at that time. But cool. All right, let's get this going. Interview number one with the Militant. Interview number two later today will be at Espacio with photographer Rafael Cardenas. So, you know, I have a 2-for-1 today. Hopefully folks tune into both. But, you know, some of the basic questions I wanted to ask is, you know, just more or less, you know, obviously not getting too much into specifics for identifiers and things like that.
Nope.
But, you know, in the area of the city that you grew up in, did that influence, you know, what you're doing now, which is like writing, you know, calling out hipsters, sharing history about different communities, the city in general, public transportation? Did that have an impact in, like, in your adolescence, you know, to keep doing this now?
Oh, most definitely. The area that the Militant is from, which is in the central part of Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and he defines that as south of the Santa Monica Mountains, west of the Los Angeles River, north of the 10, and east of La Cienega or something like that. So he grew up around that area.
Mm-hmm.
And the neighborhood that he grew up in is very diverse, very culturally diverse. You have immigrants from pretty much every country.
Was that back then, or is it still like that now?
It still is to some extent,
okay.
But more than. So everyone was a minority. There was no majority of anyone there, so that was the kind of worldview that the Militant had.
Mm.
He did grow up going to junior high, and that already dates him there. He goes to junior high on the old art, and another date reference, on the RTD bus.
Yeah, rough, tough, and dangerous.
Really tardy drivers. So, you know, that enabled him to get around. The Militant did not drive at an early age. He did not drive at 16. He didn't drive until pretty much adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
So he got around using the RTD bus, and that enabled him to get familiar, not only get used to public transportation, but get familiarized with exploring his city.
Yeah, no, and that's completely different because, I mean, I'm obviously a lot younger, but I'm still old enough to remember RTD and everything, like the world before, like smartphones and the internet being in the palm of your hand. Because back then, you really had to get around by your wits and, like, you know, some of, like, the bus schedules and directions that were available on the buses.
Yeah, what also helped was that the Militant studied the Thomas Guide, every page of the Thomas Guide.
Wow.
So if you could place the Militant, you could blindfold him, place him anywhere in Los Angeles, he will find his way back to the compound within an hour.
You know, I'm finally grateful enough to appreciate that if that were to happen to me, I can just be like, oh, east is that way, you know, and I can find myself home.
Exactly.
It might take me a while, but I'll get there eventually.
Well, follow the mountains, follow the sun, and basically.
You know, the North Star at night, what have you. And even now, because of the last 2 years I've been driving, I still have yet to memorize, like, the numbers of the freeways and be like, you know, you take the this to that to this to that and you get there. I mean, because I've been a passenger, you know, in a car, in the bus, what have you. I committed it to memory by landmarks where I can go and, like, all right, this is where I can take, you know, this street or that side street, or this is the off ramp to get on, off, and all that kind of stuff. Which to this day, that's how I just get around. And then, obviously, because it's a smartphone, usually if I'm going somewhere new, you know, turn on Waze, make sure, you know, I'm headed in the right direction. Even though these, like, driving apps are, like, super ridiculous sometimes, they just make you go, like, those super roundabout ways.
But yes, it's best to have ingrained knowledge of your geography, because you'll never know when it comes in handy.
No, you don't. All right. So what were some of those experiences, you know, taking the bus in the early days? I mean, were you just like, all right, today I'm going to go, you know, visit this neighborhood, go visit that neighborhood because I heard about this or I heard about that, or just like general interest?
It was a variety of things. The biggest The biggest discovery for the Billiton was downtown Los Angeles. And mind you, downtown Los Angeles did not look like it does today, as it is before. And in fact, there was a time, and this is, again, dating the Billiton. He must be 500 years old. When pretty much downtown was dead after 6 p.m. And yeah. That was no exaggeration. There's people on the street during the day, but at night and on the weekends, no one on the streets. Yet, the young adult militant at the time, he found some beauty in it. Walking around downtown, probably 8, 9 p.m. at night, it was silent, it was quiet, it was peaceful, it was serene. It was an interesting experience. And, you know, he's glad for, you know, that the downtown is the center of the city and there's a lot of active restaurants in there and everything. But, you know, it was an interesting time to see all of that take shape. And having that perspective on history, not just reading in a book or on the web, but witnessing it with your own eyes, that was something that formed the militancy towards the city.
I bet it did for me too. I mean, I remember going when I was still old enough to go see movies in the downtown theaters, like before they all like shut down. Cause I remember seeing my uncle would take me. So this was like the Sunday thing to do for us. He wouldn't work on Sundays, so he would take me with him to downtown. This is like when I was 10 years old, 8 years old. We would go downtown. He would take the bus. We'd go eat, like, at the Carl's Jr. on Broadway, and I think that's 7th. No, that's not 7th. It's on the corner. I forget what corner it is. 5th or 6th.
No. It's like 4th. 4th or 3rd.
Green Burrito, Carl's Jr. I think most folks would know.
3rd. It was close to Grand Central Market.
Yeah. So we would go eat there. We'd go catch a movie. I remember seeing, like, The Substitute, Jurassic Park, Dead President. I mean, I don't know why we would take me to see Dead Presidents. It's like an R-rated, hardcore movie, which is one of my favorite movies. But, you know, I was young, so I shouldn't be seeing that kind of stuff. But anyways, and then after watching a movie, usually we stay for one or two because, you know, you can just stay because they play the next one after. We would go to the arcade right there on Broadway, too. And I think that one is on, like, it was on the same block where that Carl's Jr. was. And then we would just play video games and then go home. So, like, those are, like, some of my fondest memories of, like, going into downtown. Also, the same with, like, you know, because even to this day, downtown is, like, a central hub for, like, connectivity between trains and, like, now bike share and getting to different points around town. You know, you take one bus into downtown, you do what you need to do, and then you take it either back home or to, you know, the next connection where you're going to go.
Yes, exactly. And none of that existed even, you know, 20, 30 years ago, even the whole bike infrastructure didn't exist 10 years ago.
Nope. This is all fairly new now.
Yes.
Like, one thing I tell folks is back then it used to smell like pee, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of random folks out there, like you were saying, at night. But now, and then it stopped smelling like pee, and now it smells like pee again because all the hipsters and their dogs out there. So it's like from one thing, as much as things change, you know, some things still stay the same pretty much.
Pretty much.
So for your history, you have an extensive knowledge of, like, Los Angeles. So, I mean, I don't know if you went to school for it or not, but is this something that just kind of, like, sparked in the beginning when, like, you were younger and then you pursued it? Or is this something that, like, kind of happened later on?
Well, first of all, you know, the Billiton, grew up going to LAUSD schools from kindergarten to 12th grade.
Yeah, LAUSD coffee cake.
I don't know. He seemed to remember the coffee cake. It wasn't really a thing then. He may or may not have had the coffee cake, but it wasn't a thing then. So
all right.
Maybe. He does remember the rectangular cheese pizzas.
Rectangular cheese? I hated those because they used to taste like soap.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
They were always undercooked.
They were gross, but he remembers them. So, whatever. You know, what's interesting is, you know, we recently celebrated the birthday of Los Angeles earlier this month, September 4th. And he remembers going to the Bicentennial back in 1981, which another dated reference. But the young militant, as he will refer as Lil Mill, He remembers on that day he pressured his parents to take him to Olvera Street to witness the celebration going on that day. So he doesn't know where that began, but, you know, at a young age, he was always interested in history and love of a city.
Yeah.
Sometime later on, probably after high school or something, he stumbled, another dating reference, he stumbled on the old Los Angeles Reader. And for those of you, those of you under 30, Los Angeles Reader was the competition to the Los Angeles Weekly.
Mm.
And so it was another alternative weekly paper. And on the cover was What Happened to the Red Cars? And on the cover was a picture of all the Pacific Electric red cars stacked in the junkyard. And he saw that, and he opened it, and there was a map showing the whole rail system. And he was like, whoa, what is this? So he investigated, and that kind of was his gateway drug, so to speak, of his love of Los Angeles history. And he just kind of reflected that. In his whole years of K-12 LUSD schools, they never taught any Los Angeles history. But they did. He did in high school. He did learn about the history of Boston, Massachusetts. So he was wondering, you know.
Wait. I spot a hipster. They're leaving.
Okay. 1 point for you. He wasn't even looking up. Okay. You might win, but that's okay.
I have the better view. You know the neighborhood.
Anyway. You know, it says something that local schools will teach you more about the history of Boston, Massachusetts than the history of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's sort of the reason, one of the reasons why that kind of disconnect, where people lack the love of the city, lack respect for the city, lack pride for the city. A lot of it comes out for many citizens, but for others it doesn't, and it's just only because it's their history is not taught to them.
Yeah.
They don't feel a sense of belonging to the city.
A sense of, like you said, a sense of pride. Cause
exactly.
I never got that same kind of education at LAUSD. I learned about Australia. I remember doing a class project about that and that the ostrich is their national bird. I learned about, like, white dead poets. Oh. I learned a bunch of other stuff that doesn't really apply today. But mostly like you, you know, it was one thing that's kind of, like, drew me into, like, this path that even I myself also mirror, too, where, you know, you learn something about, like, the city and how things used to be, and that really just encourages you and almost entices you to keep learning more and more and more about why that happened, why it was like that, and why things changed. So, like, for me with the rail cars, it was under through the context of, like, you know, some of the mobility justice work that I do, you know, with bike advocacy and stuff like that. Yeah. So learning about that at one point, you know, New Yorkers, among the other things that they trash talk us about, you know, complain that our public transportation sucks. You know, that they have the best one and all this other stuff. But, you know, at one point in the country's history, I think maybe, what, like 40s, 50s, around that time, that's when the rail cars were in active use. We had the best and the biggest transportation system in the entire country.
30s and 40s.
Yeah. So it's basically what Metro is trying to replicate now. This idea that you can, you know, jump on a train or a bus and get to wherever you need to get from the east side to the west side, you know, to the valley, to the bay. And, you know, back then they actually had a train that went from the east side all the way from Bull Heights. Maybe you could connect somewhere in between, but essentially, you know, you can take one train from Bull Heights all the way to Santa Monica. And with the regional connector in Little Tokyo, that's what they're trying to do one more time, you know, where you connect from the Gold Line to the Expo Line. And then, you know, in under 2 hours, I'm assuming, without train delays, accidents, collisions, or whatever happens on Metro that happens, you know, you'll be able to get from the east side to the west side. So, I mean, that's monumental to me. But also in the context of history of, like, why those rail cars left, because of the lobbying from, like, the auto industry and, like, all these other folks.
Well, that, you know, it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, so the building of freeways and, like, the changing of culture is not, obviously, it's not just one thing that, like, set it off, but a combination of, like, shifting landscapes. And now, like, it's in the reverse now where, like, things are trying to go, like, no, we should get everybody on public transportation and stop driving. And there's too much traffic, too much pollution, too many freeways, all these problems that, you know, we kind of dug ourselves into.
Yeah, it's really all about having options. And if you go to other cities in the world, you know, they drive too. They also have traffic too, but they have options. So it's important to have options here. You know, you can drive if you want, or you can take the train if you want, take the bus if you want, take the bike if you want, as long as you have options. And, you know, the militant remembers a time when we didn't have options. The only option was to drive your, you know, 1967, you know, Chevy, whatever, and, you know, it's a real big-ass car, you know, down the freeway, which wasn't even probably complete at the time.
Nope.
Yet, that was your only option. So now, you know, you have different options of getting around, and that's what's important. Having options. That's the reason why Milton has his own way of getting around, whether it's walking, taking the bike, you know, taking the train or the bus, or even driving sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the stuff that I do, you know, in advocating for mobility justice and making sure, like you said, folks have a choice to how they want to get around, and in that choice that they feel safe and comfortable and respected, because, you know, someone who's ridden their bike, you can obviously feel the hostile environment between cars and people riding their bikes. And now, like, the current shift is from bikes to people riding their scooters. Those electric scooters. And what does that mean in terms of, like, sharing space with each other? Exactly. And who feels entitled to what, and, you know, the city's part in creating safer streets for everybody.
Yes, exactly.
Have you ever ridden one of those scooters?
Actually, not yet.
I want to ride one.
Yeah, the wheels is curious. I mean, you know, as those first mile, last mile options, they're very good, you know. Yeah. It's just a matter of managing them and, you know, not leaving them out in the streets and everything like that. That's kind of crazy, you know, like leaving them out in the middle of the sidewalk where, you know, people could trip over them and all that, and they could block, you know, bike lanes or sidewalks and all that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's growing pains probably, you know. The other issue is, you know, even for the scooter's sake, you know, unless you check the app, there's no guarantee the thing is charged. So,
that's true.
Let's say you rent it and, you know, you unlock it with your smartphone, and you find out it's, you know, maybe 10% charged, then you're screwed. And let's say it's the only scooter that's around. So,
yeah.
You know, if they work out a way of having some sort of, a terminal or something where they could leave scooters and charge them as well, you know, one, they could not block the sidewalk, and two, you could guaranteed to get a charge from them.
Yeah, the designated area. Kind of like bike share right now with Metro, where they have those kiosks where you return them. That's the other thing I was reading about those scooters, because people are vandalizing them and, like, in all sorts of ingenious ways.
Oh, yeah, you heard about that.
I was reading that people were cutting the brake lines.
Uh-huh.
So, like, to your point, like, you could rent it and you can start riding.
Exactly.
You'd be going down the street 15 miles an hour and all of a sudden realize you don't have brakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That'll make for an interesting ride. Oh.
Becomes a skateboard at that point.
It's just like, if you've never ridden a skateboard and you've never been down a hill, then you know how, you don't know how sketchy that can get. I've fallen from those. I think the next question I was going to ask was to that effect of, like, you know, you have a passion for city history, obviously for public transportation and, you know, for folks that are having different options to get around, but you are also, like, one of the biggest Dodger fans that I know, like, both online and, like, in real life. Most folks that I know, you know, they're either like, oh, yeah, I'm a sports person. I follow, you know, Lakers, football, baseball, or what have you. And because they're from L.A., they're obviously repping the home team. I, of course, do the same, you know, not as extensively as other folks to understand, you know, the stats and, like, the real, like, ingenuity and, like, kind of like the intricacies of the game, right? But enough to enjoy it, to go to the game once a year in the summer, especially night games when it's, like, hot and nice and cool outside and there's fireworks, neighbor passing by revving their engine. But what was it about both the Dodgers and the Lakers that, you know, you're such a passionate fan?
Well, as the militant referred to earlier about the city schools not teaching history and how that equates to people having a lack of pride, the way people do get pride is from our local sports teams.
Of course.
And so that is one way. And the militant remembers back in the day, you know, going to the Dodgers, and again, another dated reference. You know, his favorite players back in the day were Steve Garvey and Fernando Valenzuela.
Yeah.
And Pedro Guerrero and, you know, all those folks. And, you know, they were local heroes. They were like superheroes for the militant. And, you know, it was just a great time. And, you know, the wonderful thing about, especially the Dodgers, is, you know, it brings everyone together, no matter what class, no matter what race. Everyone is, you know, everyone's there to be into the Dodgers and see the team win.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a beautiful thing in Los Angeles.
And I've seen that passion get, like, really, really intense when you hear about, like, those, like, episodes of violence where, people are getting stabbed and, like, you know.
But, you know, actually, it's kind of calmed down since then.
It has.
Haven't really heard of anything like that. So, you know, maybe we kind of chilled out. But, and, you know, go to the World Series probably helped, too.
Well, how are things looking for this year? I remember talking to my roommate, and he was, like, giving me the breakdown of, like, you know, like, the next 2, 3, 4 games are, like, the clinchers of
exactly
how they'll get in.
Well, you know, as we speak, as of today, which is September 14th, you know, the Dodgers are on a 2-game winning streak. You know, they're currently playing the St. Louis Cardinals. It's, you know, them, which themselves may or may not go to their playoffs, but, you know, it's crazy. It's not like last year where we were just waiting to go to the World Series pretty much. But, you know, it's the militant kind of thinks that, you know, Indiana Jones, where, you know, he gets the, you know, that treasure thing and he slips under the wall before it slams shut. That's pretty much what the Dodgers are going to do. So yes, they'll win the division, they'll go to the playoffs, but Just barely.
But, I mean, there have been some shifts in, like, the lineup in terms of, like, players being traded earlier on in the season. I don't think it's the same team from last year, is it?
The core is there, and then you have, you know, some other factors. You know, Matt Kemp especially, who we had a history with. And, you know, he was a player from back in the day, and he came back. And, you know, pretty much he's been, you know, one of the, if not the MVP of this season.
All right.
And then, you know, you had the newer players like, you know, Machado and Dozier and, you know, those dudes. And, you know they've been contributing. So, and, you know, we also, you know, lost Corey Seager for the season because of his surgery.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the core of the team is still there. You know, you had Justin Turner and Yasiel Puig. And,
of course.
You know, most of our pitchers are the same pitchers, the starting pitchers, the same pitchers we had last year. So, and some, especially like, Hyunjin Ryu, who was pretty much injured last year, and he's healthy right now. And so, you know, we're actually at a good point as far as our starters. They're healthy, they're not injured, and hopefully they could, last, some more pitches. So we don't have to worry about the bullpen too much. But, you know, we'll see.
Nice. All right. Well, I have yet to go to a game this year. So hopefully, I mean, that's one thing at least I try to do, especially since my girlfriend is from New York. So, you know, she's one of those transplants. But I'm over here, you know, sharing with her.
You have to indoctrinate her.
Yeah. I'm sharing with her to, like, community spaces, the different neighborhoods, the histories, from a very grounded perspective. At least I try. But, yeah, I mean, the first time we went to the game, she had a blast. We went to the all-you-can-eat section. You know, so she was, like, really not understanding why I took, like, a bag with me to take a bunch of extra hot dogs and peanut bags and stuff with me back home. So, you know, she's getting it. But, yeah, so with the Lakers, haven't heard too much about them. I think NBA season's over already.
Well, NBA season's about to begin. They're still, you know, summer. You know, the season doesn't really start until, you know, October with the preseason, and then the regular season starts in November. Obviously, everyone's excited about, you know, what's his name?
It's one of the younger guys, right?
Just kidding. LeBron James. Of course, LeBron James. King James. You know, who, you know, as we all know is an avid cyclist.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully we'll see him in a CycleVia sometime.
Hopefully. Awesome. I remember running into Sac there, Rocha at one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you know, so we'll see how it goes. You know, they'll definitely be a better team than they were the past few years. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. You know, also, you know, the Rams are doing pretty good.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about, like, how do you feel about football?
You know, when we didn't have football, he didn't care about football. But now that we have, you know, 1.5 teams in Los Angeles, you know, it's, you know, he started to get into the Rams. And, it's kind of exciting. You know, they have a lot of great players. Like, it's exciting to see, you know, what's happening. They're so far undefeated. You know, one game to nothing.
Yeah, this season just started.
But we'll see. You know, they have a lot of talent in the team.
They're getting their new stadium built over out there in Inglewood.
Yeah, but you know, even while they're still in the Coliseum, they're, you know, the fan base is building. It's getting kind of exciting, and you know, some of the old Raiders fans, you know, they're still clinging to the whole Raiders thing.
I was gonna ask if you're one of those.
like
Raiders for life.
No.
Vegas, Oakland, doesn't matter.
No, because you know, the Milton's about Los Angeles and. The Raiders are all about Oakland, well, Las Vegas soon, and he's down with a home team, and which is the Rams, and not the Chargers.
Yep.
And that's pretty much how it's going.
Yeah. So, there's still some folks out of here committed. I remember I wore a Raiders. I have a Raiders jersey because I got it at a yard sale for $10, but it never occurred to me, you know, because obviously, you know, for folks that've been around a little longer, you went more like me. You grew up with the problem of like sports gear being affiliated with gangs, you know, the Kings, the Raiders, what have you. And for me, like, I bought this set jersey for $10 at a yard sale a couple of years ago, and I was like, yeah, score Raiders jersey. But the number, it's Randy Moss. It's 81. So it never occurred to me in my head, 81, there's nothing problematic about that. And then somebody told me, you know, that's like affiliated with 18th Street, right? And I was like, come on, man. So like, I rarely wear that shirt. But when I do, last time I wore it to when I went to Costco, and I just kept getting compliments from was like, yeah, Raiders! You know, from like all these old Chicano dudes.
Well, you know, the reason why people here are Raiders fans is because, you know, they are the only NFL team that's won a Super Bowl in Los Angeles. You know, 1984, but that was basically the team that came from Oakland the previous year. But who knows? You know, if the Rams win the Super Bowl, that may change.
Yeah, we'll have murals out here then.
Yeah, you'll see. You know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, there's still a mural at the Estrada Projects. I think on off 8th, where it's like it's super faded, and there's a taco stand in front of it at night, and it's the back of a player, and it just says that commitment to excellence right there. You know, folks are still holding on to that. That one day they'll come back.
Yeah, but you know, it's a generation. You know, it's the baby boomers, it's the Gen Xers who remember, you know, the Raiders back in, you know, the 80s and 90s, but you know, we have younger generations of fans and other generations, so you know, they might. That are not connected to that history, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not too tied to it, but you know, the idea and the stereotype, you know, like if you're from East LA, you're an automatically a Raiders fan. To me, it's like it's like a joke at this point, but it's a funny one. So all right, cool. So let's get into it more about what you've been doing the last 17? No, like, well, officially on your blog, you started writing in June of 2007. Till now, but I think I remember reading in that KCT interview, you said you were like, you've been writing about like city history and culture since like 1994. So point being, you've been doing this for a long time, you know, influenced by how you grew up, your passion for it, and wanting to like explore and share it with others. But, and, you know, kind of going back to 2007, you know, what was like that tipping point of like, I need to start a blog. I need to talk, you know, and put it out there.
Well, back in the summer of 2007, the Militant may or may not have been unemployed at the time. But he was kind of going through maybe a phase. And he was reading blogs. He was reading a lot of city blogs at the time, you know, whether it's personal blogs or public blogs, you know, general blogs like LAist and things like that. Mm-hmm. And there was one that's not active anymore, blogging.la and everything like that.
I remember some of those.
Yeah.
LA City Nerd.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
The bus bench.
I was reading that and, you know, reading those things and noticing that, you know, the people who are telling the story of Los Angeles are not from here. They were telling it from their own perspective.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the perspective Milton has had.
That sounds very familiar.
And so, you know, he felt he needed to do something about it. So, It probably started from, he won't mention which one, but some online forum at the time, and he was talking about Los Angeles history and transportation and things like that, and, you know, he was dropping all this knowledge, but he was he kind of questioned, well, he was talking about these things to this closed audience, you know, the people in that online forum.
Well, I think I have to slow down a little bit and explain to folks what a forum is.
Oh, okay. Well, a forum is a website, and, you know, it's like a message board. You have to, you know, you have a username, and, you know, you post a message about a certain topic or subtopic, because the forum is probably based on a certain interest or topic. And so he was on one of those unspecified forums talking about Los Angeles history and everything. And, you know, people were learning, but it was a closed audience. It was only people in that forum. So he wanted to go, you know, reach a larger audience.
Yeah.
So that's how he started the Militant Angelito blog.
Nice.
And, you know, it quickly got respect from, you know, the mainstream blogs at the time. And so that kind of grew. And, you know, he's grateful for that.
Nice. And you've been doing it. I mean, I was looking through you, through the blog. You know, in those early years, you were super consistent about it. I think, you know, I think maybe because it was still fresh and you were getting a lot of attention and connecting
Milton
with folks.
Was younger then.
You were younger. We all were. Because then back then, too, in that time period, there was, and this is, you know, kind of like how things are now. If you talk to somebody like, I have a blog, it's like, that's, you ain't shit. Like, everybody can have a blog. You have a MySpace, you have a Facebook. You know, that's those current iterations of that. But back then, that was, you know, one of the social media forums where folks were, like, talking and communicating before it became a big deal. You know, me, myself being a part of that through LA East Side, having my own personal one that I've been keeping up for the last 10 years as a personal diary. You know, in those early days, you were, like, just on it. You were always talking about what was going on. I was reading one that was, you were talking about how that Simpsons episode where Home was in 3D and where it was filmed in Ventura. So, you know, it's a lot of insightful, like, references to, like, you know, this movie was filmed here. Or, like, you know, you may not know, but this building is, like, X amount of years old. You know, so-and-so used to live there, or maybe it's haunted, or, like, you know, those insights of, like, Jeopardy-like trivia. And to me, that's something that I've always appreciated, because on top of, like, you know, my own learning, like, reading, exploring, and having first-hand experience, learning about it from elders and, you know, hearing from them, yours was one of those resources where I can go to, like, let me see what he's talking about, like, this month or this week, and find out, you know, what's happening. So, like you said, you were employed in those younger days, and you were connecting with other folks. So what were some of your favorite times, like, you know, when you were doing that?
You know, actually, one of those times was participating in the early mass bike rides. You know,
is this like Critical Mass?
Critical Mass. What was the other? Midnight Riders.
Yeah.
His favorite one was one that was not a huge one, but it was called Ride Arc.
I never heard of that one.
It was actually organized by SciArc alumni or students.
The architecture school down the street.
And what it was is they organized rides around a certain part of town, and they stopped at certain buildings and explained the history.
Like the architecture.
You know, the architectural significance and, you know, who was responsible. And, you know, the Milton covered those rides, a lot of them, in his blog.
All right.
And, you know, it was part of the content. It was also part of sharing that history with people. And, you know, the Milton really, you know, he gained a lot from that, not just historically, but, you know, in getting comfortable riding the streets.
Yeah, it's a lot safer to do it in a group.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, he's grateful for those. He's kind of sad that they don't have those Ride Arc rides anymore.
Do you remember the last time you went to one?
Oh, man, that was almost 10 years ago.
That's a good chunk of time.
08, 09, something like that. But, you know, well, he'll talk about something later on that relates to that. But stay tuned. But, yeah, it was one of those rides where he would go with a group of folks, and one of them would be an expert on the history of certain locations and just drop that knowledge on the other riders. It was wonderful.
Was this in the daytime or at night?
It was at night.
Oh, that's even better.
Yes. So, you know, and he also learned to, you know, bike at night. There's less traffic.
Of course.
You know, as long as you got your lights on and everything, as long as you're visible.
You're visible. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I love going to Critical Mass, which I haven't, unfortunately, done in a good chunk of time. But I recently recommended it to one of the KPCC reporters who was asking on Twitter, you know, where should I go this weekend to ride my bike? And it's like, why don't you go Critical Mass? So what was your experience like in those early days?
It was cool. It was, you know, especially like Midnight Riders. You know, it was kind of like a party.
Yeah.
A party on two wheels. A party on, you know, 2,000 wheels or something like that. You know, it was fun. It was, you know, connecting with certain people, both, you know, whether as the Milton or as his, you know, mild-mannered self,
mm-hmm.
which, whose name is, no, he won't tell, but he'll always tease it, you know, like that, you know, getting to know people in the black community, getting to know people, especially the black advocacy community.
Yeah.
You know, the Milton is kind of part of that, you know, in the shadows.
In solidarity.
So, you know, that it was... It's a great community atmosphere.
Yeah. That's one thing I always enjoyed about it. Did you ever go on any of the marathon crash rides?
Actually, no. He doesn't wake up that early.
No, it's hard. Yeah. It's a pain in the ass.
He did ride on the first marathon, the legitimate bike ride back in 95.
Yeah, when they still had a bike component to it.
Yes, and I think... He thinks he did it like once or twice.
That's when we went around like USC, right? Like,
yeah,
they made a roundabout. Yeah.
One of those times, you know, he met Muhammad Ali.
Oh no way!
Right before, because Ali, you know, helps kick off the running marathon.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you know, he's there at the starting gate, and you know, to cheer people on. And so when we were done with the marathon ride, you know, which kind of ended near the beginning of the running marathon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, Milton brought it, you know, came over and, you know, introduced himself to Ali, who has huge hands. Whoa, huge hands. So that was a great experience.
Nice. Because I have a friend who took me for the first time the last year that the marathon was doing that roundabout. So, you know, he told me like, you know, hey, like, I'm going to go meet up. And this is like Midnight Riders, folks. We're going to go meet up with some folks in the middle of the night, go ride the marathon route, and then, like, you know, go have breakfast after that. So that was my first experience doing that. Like, you got to get up at, like, 2 a.m., get your stuff ready. We rode out there. We did the ride. And it was like, wow, this is amazing. And then that was, since that was the last year where they had the bike component and that route, the year after, that's when, like, Don Ward of, like, Wolfpack Hustle and other folks, you know, started using that opportunity where the route is now from Dodger Stadium all the way to Santa Monica, you know, to take over the streets. For them, it was about competitive street racing. But that was, like, one component of it. The other one was still at heart what, you know, kind of like what you were talking about with, like, folks just getting together, riding, and having fun. And for me, that's been something that I've been doing. I didn't do it last year because I was just tired. But the last few years before that, you know, getting a group of friends, especially over here from the east side, it's like, hey, like, you know, let's plan. Let's go ride the marathon route and, like, go have breakfast out there and, like, this super, like, dive diner joint called Ray's. I forget what streets it's off, but I saved it on my Google Maps every time I go. And we did it before the expo line was built, so we had to ride all the way back home. So that was like a good 50, 60 miles. And then the Culver City station was built, so we would ride to the Culver City station. And then the last year we did it, you know, the whole expo line was built, so it was a lot easier just, you know, head over to the nearest train station and then go back home, as opposed to years where we had to, like, you know, really ride back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's an amazing experience to ride the city where the streets are closed off. You know, there's cops and people setting up for the marathon, but essentially you have the streets to yourself.
Exactly.
When you get to Hollywood and, like, the West Side areas, because folks are getting out of clubs, you know, folks are just out and about doing their thing. But to have that experience of, like, being with a crowd of, like, thousands of folks, you know, everybody's just out there doing their thing. Some folks are smoking, drinking, partying it up. It's something, you know, I would recommend to anybody, you know, would want to do it. And if you want to do it next year, I'm going to do it next year. I committed myself. I'm like, next year I'm going to do it again. It is a pain in the ass to get up that early.
The ride starts with a built-in sleep, so... Yeah,
because for us, we do it with we meet up at Mariachi Plaza around 3:30 a.m. Gather up by 4 a.m. We're riding out. You know, we meet up at the starting point over on Sunset where Tang's Donuts used to be, like Sunset and Fountain. And then from there, just ride the entire route. And by the time we finish, or well, at least you need to finish by 6 a.m. because that's when the cops, like, start getting you off the course so, like, the runners can get ready and everything. But super awesome, amazing experience.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right. So with the blog, I've also been noticing, like, the last couple of years too, you and I feel you on this one, because I've been doing the same. You haven't been writing as much and posting as much. Is it because
no one reads blogs anymore?
Yeah,
nobody reads blogs anymore. So why stay up till 4 a.m. to finish a blog post when three people will read it? Come on.
What do you think is the shift?
Huh?
What do you think happened? Like, the drop off in terms of, like,
probably social media, probably. Mm. You know. So, you know, the Milton adapted, you know, he's found a hole on Twitter, you know, he has his followers on Twitter, and that's kind of where he concentrates on. He has a Facebook and Instagram presence, but he really doesn't really do it that much. Most of his activity is on Twitter.
Sometimes you just have to do it to hold the account name, you know, in case you want to do something later on.
Yeah, probably.
That's what
I do. That makes sense.
Whatever it is, Snapchat, Instagram, I'll just, like, go in there, create an account, and save my name in case, like, sometime down the road I need to, like, claim it and use it. But, no, I mean, like you said, a lot of folks just gravitated towards social media, and I think that's where it's at in terms of, like, your Twitter. You know, you're always consistent with, like, what you're doing. I saw, like, in July you went to that taco spot over there on Lorena.
Oh, yeah.
And Whittier.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, he loves it. He probably gained, like, 4 pounds for that experience, but it was all worth it. And, you know, he'll definitely go again. He may or may not have gone again. So you may or may not spot him there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, not to burn the spot, but Whittier and Lorena, like, tacos, quesadillas. Yeah. I think they have tortas now too. But point being is the tacos. They make the tortillas by hand. They have 2 meat choices, asada, chorizo. But if you're legit, you'll do like me and you'll order like campechana. So it's like a mix of both meats.
Oh, okay.
You gotta try that next time you go.
Okay. He wants to try the vampiros.
Oh, those are good too.
He hasn't tried that yet, but That's what he'll try next.
Yeah, age is catching up on me on the cheese, and, like, I can't handle that much anymore.
But yeah, it's all the homemade tortillas.
Yeah, that's where it's at. Yeah, they make everything right there in the spot. But so with, you know, this shift in the landscape, where, like, the last couple of years, you know, blogs have been dying off. You know, you've just been more present on social media. Where do you think, like, your future is going to keep going? Like, just keeping up with the same channels?
Well, you know, the Milton still has the blog as, like, a publishing resource. You know, he still, when he has, if he has something to say that's, you know, and he still keeps his blog up as you know.
A Blogspot.
Yeah, well, yeah, as archive. So,
that's,
you know,
true.
You know, whatever he wrote, you know, 5, 10 years ago, you know, most of it's still valid. You know, if the place still exists, or even does exist, just, you know, letting people know it did exist and things like that. You know, it's a document of its time, and, you know, he won't take it down or anything like that. And, you know, he still updates it, you know, when he writes his Epic Ciclovia posts.
Yeah, those are intense.
And, you know, once in a while, he'll if he has something to say, he'll post it. You know, just because it's there.
No, I mean, that's one thing I enjoy is, like, you still have a place to call your own where you can post stuff.
It's just not as mainstay these days. It's, you know, mostly Twitter. And, you know, Twitter is the thing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and, you know, it's kind of cool if you're at an event or you're witnessing something and it's live and, you know, you're capturing it for people.
That's,
you know,
right.
There's a value to that.
Is that so, real-time posting and commentary? Yeah, well, let's keep it on Twitter then. Are there some folks that you particularly enjoy following for, like, their commentary, their insight? I know you talked to LA Times reporter, she does transportation, Laura Nelson, a lot on Twitter because of, like, you know, she's usually sharing something about what's going on because of what happened at the last meeting or updates that are coming or even just, like, you know, like something about the fuzzy seats or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, because of her beat in the paper, you know, Milton's in the transportation, a lot of times the military wants to, you know, add on to the knowledge because, you know, she's not from here. She's from Kansas City area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she might be knowledgeable on the current issues, but maybe not the historical issues. So the military's just there to add some context.
Ah, I love it. But can I'm going to admit something like super low key. I enjoy following her and her insight and her beat reporting. But I think she's one of the folks I would wish who would have two Twitter accounts. Like one for like all her reporting and like, you know, beat coverage, and then just one separate for all her like personal stuff.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Because there's a lot of reporters who do that, and I'm like, I appreciate that. I was like, all right, if I wanted to like see what you're eating and where you're hanging out this weekend, I'll follow that account. But if I just want to cover you for your beat, you know, and follow you over here, that's, I think, where a lot of folks get more out of it, too. Yeah.
Well, you know, the militant has, you know, more than two Twitter accounts.
Mm.
Well, the other accounts are for his, you know, mild-mannered personality, which is, no, he won't tell you. But, you know, nobody follows those anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
People follow the militant. And what's funny is, you know, when he tweets as his regular self to someone who knows about the militant, you know, they'll never retweet or reply. But if it's the militant telling them the same thing, oh boy, you know, it's all over the place. So there is some clout being the militant Angelina.
There is. I mean, exactly. It's that social media clout. You know, you're like one of those voices that's out there. You always make, like you said, you're creating these amazing Ciclovia posts. And you've transitioned with, like, the changing times as, like, these channels have come on board with Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, what have you. Did you ever have a MySpace?
Not as the militant. No, because, yeah, the MySpace era was, you know, pre-07, so...
Yeah, I got mine in 2004.
Okay. Yes, you know, he was on as his regular self. But,
nice.
You know, he never created a militant MySpace. Yeah.
And then, so the other thing with your social media channels, again, obviously Twitter, that's where you've kind of, like, still held the flag up for checking all these transplants and like still kind of keeping true to your original intentions with the blog of like sharing history and correcting those who aren't from here about what's really going on in LA, the history, the context and stuff like that. And it's always funny to like see you do that when you're like almost like these online Twitter fights kind of like get started and you see them escalate little by little.
Yeah. You know, it's the militant's duty. It's his purpose in life.
Yeah. Where do you stand on like the whole like, I don't know if folks know this, but like the New York Times has this habit of like really stereotyping Los Angeles and just pointing to like the cliches.
You know what? Here's the thing. You know, the build has been around long enough where it's kind of expected, and he doesn't trip over it all the time because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's. He's fought his battles, and unless it's something, you know, new, and, you know, he ain't going to trip on that. It's just old news for him. Yeah, you know, they always hate on Los Angeles, but, he doesn't have the time or energy to clap back at them, you know, every time they post some article
that's
about...
That's exhausting.
Exactly. Yes.
You see it in your Twitter feed, you roll your eyes, you keep moving.
Exactly.
You know, there's enough of this.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, it's... You know, but, you know, it's interesting. Back in the day, you know, when the militant started, you know, with New York Times did that, everyone would accept that as a gospel truth. But now... You know, even you see with transplants, they would question that. So that there's signs that things are kind of progressing. So that's interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see that perspective.
No, because I mean, I like kind of like calling back to the old blogging days. I remember when 2007, 2008, when everybody that was in the blogosphere was like up in arms about like the whole debate we had about where the East Side is. And just to give some folks some context, you know, the blog I was a part of, LA East Side, The Militant, a few others who were active at that time, you know, we all basically had an online debate or argument or yelling at each other, whichever way you want to see it, where, you know, us folks who live on the East Side, we're pretty much on the East Side, like East LA, east of the river.
The Los Angeles River.
Yeah, and we had other folks, you know, in Silver Lake, in Echo Park, saying, no, that's the East Side, because it was east to whatever, like, street they were east of. And that's when, like, the LA Times started picking it up and everybody else started chiming in on, like, what determines, like, the points of, like, this section is this and that section is that. And but really speaking more to, like, the shifting landscape in terms of, you know, all these new folks coming in and being transplants and not understanding the city or the history or the connotations of what that would mean and being basically clapped back and checked by everybody else who's either a local or, like, folks like me who've been longtime residents and, you know, have a passion for the city.
Is it a question or a statement?
Probably both. Okay. But what do you remember about that, like the whole debate? Because I know you were part of it.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, the Billiton has made a post that addresses that. You know, he actually drew a map of you know, urban Los Angeles regions. You know, he designated, you know, the east side, which is east of the Los Angeles River.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget that. And you know, South Los Angeles. The West Side, the San Fernando Valley, Northeast Los Angeles. But what's important is, you know, there is a center. A lot of people criticize Los Angeles not having a center. We have a center. It's a big center, but the center is what's between the East Side and the West Side.
Yeah.
And, you know, the center, that's where the Billiton was born and raised. You know, that's what he calls home. And there is no line where you can hop over and go from the east side to the west side. No. Go from the east side, you go to the center, then you go to the west side.
Yeah.
You know, there is no line between the east coast and west coast.
No.
You know, you have the Midwest, you got the Rocky Mountains, you know, you have the plains regions. That's what's in between. So the central Los Angeles is the middle of the city. That's where these people who like to claim, quote, east side, that's the center of the city. They should learn that that's where they are and not the east side.
Yeah, you know? Get it right.
The Billiton's not from the east side, but he respects the east side. And, you know, he respects the history and the traditions and the identity. And, you know, so he's totally down, you know, with telling the truth that the east side, which he's in right now, you know, because it's east of the Los Angeles River.
So I think that set folks straight when we got that debate going. And it's, I mean, it's died down, but I think there's still
some. There
should
be no debate. It's truth. It's scientific truth. It's undebatable. And anyone who debates that, you know, you're whack. Sorry.
This is the better way of putting it. All right. So, I mean, and you kind of mentioned this already, so I wanted to really get into it now. It's the Ciclovía and the post you do. So I think you're one of the folks that I know that have been doing it. I mean, I don't think you've done all of them. Have you done all of them?
The Billiton has done an epic Ciclovía tour post ever since the second Ciclovía, which was the same route as the first one. So he has done an epic Ciclovía tour guide for every Ciclovía route that's ever been conducted.
And you were there, like, for the first one on
the
10.
Billiton has been to all 26 Ciclovías.
Wow.
Ever since October 10, 2010. He has not missed a single Ciclovía, and he will not miss one ever.
Nice. What did you think of it when it first came around?
It was a wonderful experience. He may or may not have been a volunteer at some point.
Oh, right.
He won't say where, but it was... Well, before then, a lot of people didn't know what to expect. Actually, the Billiton, he was a year and a half before Ciclovía. There was an event called, you may or may not have heard this, it was called the LA Bike Summit. It was held in March of 2009 at Trade Tech.
Okay.
Trade Tech College, you know, close to the Blue Line Grand Station.
Yep.
And it was all the, you know, bike, you know, the bike advocates, they were getting together to have a big powwow.
Oh, you know it's coming back this year to L.A.?
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, it's about time.
Yeah, and the BCBC summit, too.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, it's good to know. Well, the Billiton was there, and, you know, they were talking about, you know, those were the days where, you know, we got our panties wet, you know, when we heard about Sharrows. Oh, Sharrows are coming. Whoa. You know, those days. But, you know, you had different workshops. Talk about, you know, bike advocacy, bike safety.
Infrastructure, all that kind of stuff.
And there was one workshop called Ciclovía. bringing a Ciclovia to Los Angeles.
Okay.
So he was there at that workshop, and you know, there was a couple of people who went to the original Ciclovia in Bogota, Colombia, and they showed pictures, and they said, you know, this is what they do every Sunday. They close off 70 miles of streets, you know, to cars, and just open it to bikes and pedestrians and, you know, non-motorized transport.
And is that something recent either? They've been doing it for decades.
Yeah, since the 1970s. And, you know, the presenter said, we would like to bring it to Los Angeles. And so the built it was all, you know, he is 100% in support of this. Don't think it'll ever happen, but he's down. But, you know, would you know?
That healthy skepticism.
Well, but would you know, a year and a half later, it happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people didn't know what to expect. Mm-mm. You know, the people who were against it, you know, they thought the worst. They thought, oh, there's going to be a lot of traffic and, you know, all that. It's
Carmageddon all over again.
But, you know, what's interesting is some of the original haters are today posting on their social media, oh, it's Ciclovia. So, you know, that is transformative.
It's changed people's minds. I was one of those folks, though, because the first route, the original route, came to Bull Heights via 4th Street and ended at Hollenbeck Park.
Yes.
And, like, to me, the aftermath of that, because, you know, it was here in the neighborhood, was that initial, like, point of, like, it was just, like, really, like, rubbing people the wrong way where, like, you know, obviously there's posted traffic signs not to park, right? That, you know, this event was coming, kind of like when they do filming. Don't park on these days between these times. And those were up in the community, but I think a lot of folks got left with a big bad taste in their mouth because their cars got towed, like, in those early Ciclovias.
Yeah, you know, they probably weren't paying attention. They didn't know it was a big deal.
Yeah.
They just thought, oh, you know, it's like filming or something
whatever,
like that.
Whatever, street paving.
But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, when they were talking about, you know, this at the bike summit, you know, they showed examples of other cities like in New York, San Francisco, you know, Minneapolis, whatever. But would you know, years later, gosh, this is 9 years later after that, Ciclovia is the largest open streets event in the United States.
Wow.
It you know, because it attracts so much people, it happens year round, where, you know, New York City, it's only in the summer, and
that ride that's from borough to borough,
but and it's not as big, but here we do it in December, and we do it in March, you know, and we do it in the summer. So
we got that great LA weather,
exactly. So you know, there's no excuse to not get your bike in Los Angeles. You got year round biking weather, you know. But yes, it's been a transformative event. It's more than an event. It's you know, something that, you know, what's beautiful is, you know, seeing the little kids participate in
Definitely.
It. And, you know, when they grow up, you know, Ciclovia is just a part of their lives. For us, it's like, whoa, you know, this is a thing that happened and transformative. No, for them, it's just, hey, you know.
It's just how things have always been.
Oh, yeah, remember Ciclovia? Yeah, I mean, remember, you know, when we were little, went to Ciclovia, oh, yeah, you know, and then they bring their kids to Ciclovia. You know, it's like that.
Generational.
Exactly, and you know, it's the built-in's glad that, you know, this is part of, this is one of those events that really transformed Los Angeles. And
yeah.
The built-in is really proud to witness that with his own eyes.
No, and there's been spinoffs too. I went not too long ago to the City of Vernon, Hunting Park. They did their own open streets event, which is super cool because those are streets you hardly ever get to ride because there's so much truck traffic and pollution and exhaust out there. Even though it wasn't as well attended as, like, the Ciclovias are, it was still something that I hope to keep doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. That was the purpose to, you know, let people know. And, you know, the Milton hopes he hasn't been, obviously, to those other events. He has been to the Long Beach streets a couple of times.
That's right. And you've been to the Grand Prix I know you've written about the Grand Prix, but I know they opened the track to folks like on one of the days too. Okay. I don't know.
Maybe. But he went to the one that went to Uptown Long Beach. You know, it's kind of pretty much the same thing as Ciclovia.
Yeah.
Just, you know, maybe slightly smaller scale, but, you know, same kind of environment.
In Long Beach.
Yeah. Same kind of vibe. You know, it's, you know, every community deserves to have something like that. Well, imagine one day when all the cities get together and have an open seats event on the same day at the same time. Whoa. Can you imagine?
If only. I mean, that kind of bureaucracy is just, like, mind-boggling.
Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
So you started doing these Ciclovia posts after the first one. So what inspired you to, like, to do it in the first place?
The Ciclovia route, it's a geographical line from one community to another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the militant noticed, well, you know, he wrote about that place, and he wrote about that place.
All right.
Why not make a guide for people attending Ciclovia, riding in Ciclovia, that explains all these different places along the route that you might take for granted.
Look, there's another hipster. Or maybe not. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
No. 2 points for you. 0 for the militant. He's not looking that direction. Anyway, the second Ciclovia in April of 2011,
mm-hmm.
you know, he made the first epic Ciclovia tour. And so he plotted out the Ciclovia route, and he put little points in a Google map that showed the different parts, whether it's a building or a historical place,
mm-hmm.
or even just, you know, a unique a business or landmark.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really, you know, Ciclovia is designed for people to get out of the cars and enjoy their city, you know, from the view of a bike or on foot.
Skateboard, exactly. What have you.
And this is a way to appreciate it even more, to understand that there's a history, that there are wonderful places. And, you know, it's the Milton's thought long and hard about this. You know, the real thing about Los Angeles, you can't stereotype it.
Mm-mm.
You know, and that's, you know, what those, you know, those East Coast types do a lot, you know, because they're very simple-minded. But, it's true. We're very complex here. This is a complex city. You know, we have a complex geography.
We do.
Complex demographics.
A history. We all go along with it.
Complex.
Yeah.
Our cuisine is complex. That's maybe we do stereotype it. That's what it is. It's complexity. But, really, for Los Angeles, if you look at other people that have celebrated Los Angeles, from Hulhauser to Jonathan Gold, it's all about uncovering hidden treasure.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And that's, you know, what the militant has done. So really, you know, Los Angeles is uncovering buried treasure. And the Epic Ciclovia Guide is one example of a treasure map.
Yeah, no, because that's one of my follow-up questions is, you know, they're so extensive, and you really do a thorough job of, like, this landmark here, or that happened here, you know, giving specific details. So in my mind, it's like, do you, like, do research every year, Larry? Every year there's a new route, and, you know, you have to figure things out, or, you know, and like you said, for some of it, it's, like, overlap. You already wrote about it, or you already knew about it, so it's kind of like, all right, let me just put it on this post.
It's a combination of things. Some of the points he already you know, knows about the history, so it's just a matter of writing that.
Yeah.
You know, some of the subjects and places he's already written about in the blog, or he just has personal knowledge of that. You know, other places, you know, he knows a little about the history. He just wants to, you know, flesh it out a little more. So he does research on some of those.
Watch some Hulhauser.
Yeah, well, you know, read some books, you know, look at some sites, you know, things like that. But, so that's really what it is. It's
nice.
Just kind of, you know, both, you know, known history and, you know, part research history.
Yeah, and now with when is the next Ciclovia?
Next Ciclovia is last Sunday of this month, Sunday, September 30th.
Oh, wow, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Well, to that point, you are going to have not only your latest iteration of, like, the Ciclovia history post, but you're also going to be doing a live version of it.
Exactly. The Milton is proud to announce that he is bringing his epic Ciclovia tour live in person. He is teaming up with Biking in L.A., Ted Rogers of Biking in L.A., and they're teaming up and collaborating, because, you know, that the next Ciclovia is a collaboration between Ciclovia and the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Oh, that's right.
So it's only proper that Milton Angelino and Blackie in LA collaborate themselves for this tour. So we are going to start around Walt Disney Concert Hall, 12 noon on Sunday the 30th. Ooh,
that's a tall hill to get up to.
Well, you know, well, we'll go to a leisurely place. And it will go from downtown to, you know, through Koreatown, through Hollywood, and, you know, we'll basically cover the whole route. Mm-hmm. And yep. We'll make a few stops along the way, and we'll point out some of the things that are in the published Epic Sequel Video Guide, but as a bonus, there are some places that the Militant will point out that are not in the Epic Sequel Video Guide that you will only get from the tour.
Is it would be like, that's where the Militant bought his first pair of shoes, or like...
Something like that. You know, he doesn't want to give it away, but...
that's the Militant's, like, favorite, like, Hugo spot.
Yeah, that's where he went to high school. Nope, that's not where he went to high school, but maybe.
So that's cool. How did that come about?
Ted Rogers came up with the idea a few years ago. Hmm. He said, oh, you should do one of these tours live. And Milton thought long and hard about it, and he thought, no, he couldn't do that. That means he has to go out in public.
But some dangers of that, yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, he's thought about it, and, you know, he's been around for 10 years, and he feels, you know, maybe it's time to do that. So, yeah. You know, he actually planned to do this a few years ago, but there's been some technical difficulties on either side of this partnership, and... But this was the right time because it's a new route, and Ted lives near Hollywood.
Yeah,
and you know the Milton's neighborhood is fairly close by
in that proximity.
Yes, in the general area. So, you know, it's not like going out to Claremont or whatever. Milton had to take MetroLink to get out there.
Yeah, you have your MetroLink flask right there.
Exactly. Represent.
And then for folks who don't know Ted, he's an amazing guy. You know, you can find him on Twitter as Biking in LA, and he's one of the folks I follow and you know, consistently look to when something in LA is happening in terms of what's going on with like the bike culture. So he really covers a lot of like the hit and runs that are going on. He offers his own commentary of what's happening in terms of like infrastructure or plans and meetings that are going on. So for folks who, you know, you want to gain more of that insight, if you aren't following him on Twitter already, you should.
And the tour is not just a history lesson, but it's also a lesson in bike advocacy and you know, safety. So Ted will cover those
nice.
You know, those things. Yeah. We're working on, you know, which places we'll stop at right now, but you'll find out on the 30th.
Cool. All right.
Also, if you want to get on the ride, the Milton strongly suggests you RSVP. So you email him at miltonangelino@gmail.com. Just the RSVP. No plus ones. I mean, if you want to bring a friend, tell your friend to RSVP themselves.
So yeah.
So we've got a good count of how many people to expect.
All right. So there you go, folks. They're going to do the ride at Ciclavia. It's going to be the starting point at the Walt Disney Concert Hall. But more than anything, you know, reach out to the Militant. Obviously, he just gave you his email. Say it one more time so folks can write it down.
Oh, Milton Angelino. MILITANT. ANGELENO, not IE, at gmail.com. And, you know, you can follow Milton on Twitter if you don't already. You know, Milton Angelino, it's spelled a little differently because Twitter has a character limit. So it's MILITANTANGLE.
I was like, I wrote it down. It's Militant Angelino.
Angelino, yeah. One is missing. Because of Twitter's character limits.
Yeah, we have to get around that somehow. But, yeah, I mean, the last thing I really wanted to, like, to touch base on was, like, and you kind of alluded to that with the tour, is that, you know, you're very secretive, you know, you're very private, and you want to keep it that way, which I totally respect. So how hard has it been, like, keeping that facade, like, for the last couple of years? Because, like, in our social media interactions, especially during, like, public events, like, open streets events and stuff like that, you know, you'll just kind of, like, tease the folks where, you know, hey, I met you today, but you didn't know it was me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a part of his identity. He's been doing it for over a decade, so, you know, why not keep doing it? It's, yeah. You know, it's... You know, there's also a reason why he does that. You know, if you haven't seen him, he dresses up in camouflage.
Well, if you're wearing camo, he might be able to see you.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an irony to that. But, you know, there's symbolism in that because, you know, Wilson was born and raised in Los Angeles. And a lot of people associate Los Angeles with Hollywood and the showbiz industry. And
surfing.
The Wilton represents the people who are not represented in those mainstream cultures of Los Angeles. So, in a way, he's hidden. And so that's what his uniform is. And, you know, he's born and raised here, but he comes from an immigrant family. You know, a lot of people here come from immigrant backgrounds, mm-hmm, whether they're immigrants themselves or they're dreamers or, you know, they have parents or grandparents who came from another country. So we all have that kind of experience where, you know, we have that unique part of being American or Angelino or Californian, but also part of, you know, our identity of origin.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, we are not fully one or the other. We carry, you know, parts of one and parts of the other, and that's what makes us unique.
Ni de aquí, ni de allá.
Exactly.
Neither from here nor from there. It's just like
but
one thing.
Milton's from here, Los Angeles. This is where he's from. So if you ever tell him to go back where he came from, he's just going to stay put.
That's right. Well, has that something that's been impacting you, you know, in your personal life, the shifting landscape of, like, folks having to move from one neighbor to another, like, all the construction going on, the, like, the rising, like, housing costs?
You know, the Billiton is, you know, lived in his neighborhood for a long time, so he's seen that history, he's seen that change. It's really tough. Fortunately, his own neighborhood isn't, you know, it's not like Echo Park.
No, God,
it's not, you know, and you could use that as, you know, just, you know, by process of elimination, he's not from Echo Park. But, you know, he's comfortable in that there are certain things about his neighborhood that kind of keep those things from happening. They might happen in some limited form, but it's not going to be like Echo Park where the culture is totally decimated. That's just kind of how he sees things.
Okay.
So it's a special part of town that the village is proud to be from.
So far, yet to be untouched by the awful hand of gentrification. Like, Boyle Heights is going through that shift right now.
Yeah. You know, it's a very complex issue. Mm-hmm. There's some aspects of gentrification that may not be that bad, but, you know, you can't let a neighborhood go full reign, you know, being all gentrified out. You know, that's an extreme example. The only advice the bill could have is to have some certain kind of control of your neighborhood, which, you know, some things might be tough. I mean, it's all, you know, owning land might be hard for many people, but if there's a way to acquire land, you know, whether it's local businesses or people, you know, who or connecting with organizations or people who have those resources,
yeah,
it's all, you know, if you go to a third world country, even poor people own land because, you know, the land was passed down by generations.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important to have that. Not be fooled by the lure of, you know, cash for keys and all that.
And all those signs we see on those posts.
Exactly. That's evil. So, you know, you got to educate people that, you know, yeah, you'll get some money, but it's not the money that, you know, they're going to flip the house for.
No, a lot of flipping going on over here.
Yeah.
But, all right, so that's pretty much it. You know, be on the lookout for the Epic Ciclovia Tour in person this time, of course. RSVP by emailing the Militant Angelino. You can hit him up on Twitter. If you're not following him already, follow him. Great insight on city history. Also love it when you chime in on city politics because that's always hilarious. Like, I don't know if you saw already, Jose Weezer's wife is going to be running for his seat here in CD 13.
14.
Wait, 14. That's right. 14. Sorry. Forgot where I'm at right now. But is there anything else you wanted to, like, let folks know? Maybe just a little push to keep reading the blog. I don't know.
You know, follow the Militant on Twitter. You know, read the blog if you want, militantangelino. .blogspot.com.
Those archives are amazing.
Yeah, you know, he'll occasionally tweet about some archive posts. And, you know, the last thing is stay militant.
That's right, folks. Stay militant. All right. Thank you again for coming.
It's been a pleasure.
Making the time. Special 1-year anniversary show here. If you,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. I never thought I would get to this point because I just figured I would drop it off at some point. But so far, the podcast and the folks I get to talk to has been enjoyable, super fun. And until it starts turning into work, that's probably when I'll stop doing it. Because then, you know, or maybe something else comes along and everybody just completely...
Don't think about stopping. You'll stop when it's time to stop, but don't think about stopping.
No, I won't. No, not yet. In fact, now that I got this mobile set up, like a little like tuned in, you know, hopefully I'll be producing more shows.
Yeah.
So as you heard them, stay militant, folks, and we'll catch you out there next time.
Peace.